talk radio that you control. On the show tonight, it's your host, Bonnie, and 603-283-6160 is the phone number you can call to get on the air with us tonight. 603-283-6160. And starting off the show tonight, we have a discussion about Joe Biden. Apparently, he's doing more deportations than Trump, specifically deporting more asylum seekers than Trump did.
Well, yeah, we don't have the other categories of deportations. This is the numbers that that we came across, and it's a shocking number.
I don't know the entire number, but I have here the U.S. removed over 6,000 Haitian asylum seekers from the border at Del Rio. So that's just Haitian asylum seekers, just, you know, recently with, you know, the whips and horses. Did you see that?
Oh, I saw that. Very scary stuff.
Yep, there was ICE agents, well, I guess they're ICE, just Border Patrol agents.
Border Patrol.
On horseback, whipping people.
Yeah, like cattle.
Yeah, like cattle, like wrangling them with whips and hitting them with a long whip.
It looked incredibly frightening and scary to be in that situation with a bunch of armed men on horses attacking people who are just trying to escape the hellish life of living in Haiti.
Yep.
And do you think the Biden voters expected this to happen? Because the people on the left, like Biden, love to position themselves as the friend of the immigrants.
Yep, they acted like Trump was the worst for immigration. And right when immigration, right when Joe Biden got elected, like somebody I know got a deportation letter. It was just, and they were telling him, oh, it's been a lot worse recently under Biden.
They told him that?
Well, I think his friends, sorry. Like his friends that, like, he was.
Who also might be not legal immigrant types.
I may know some other people like that.
Well, according to the same place that you're looking here, it's a Twitter account, AJ Plus. They're citing CNBC saying that Biden is using what's called Title 42 to expel asylum seekers without a right to a hearing. So, you know what asylum is, right?
Yeah, when you leave somewhere that is, you're going to die there.
Well, yeah, or they're going to put you in prison for the rest of your life, or, you know, they're after you for whatever reason. And the numbers here are just shocking. According to CNBC, under Trump, remember, Trump had 4 full years, and we're not even through year number one of Biden. 440,000 people were expelled under this Title 42 during the Trump administration. And 690,000 have been expelled under the Biden administration, under Title 42. So that's a tremendous level of increase, because if Biden is able to keep up the same amount over the next 3 years.
Yeah, he could be at like 2,400, wait, I don't know, 2
million. It was 690,000 right now. So yeah, it would be well over 2 million people.
Wow.
So, you know, that is just absolutely horrifying, because these people, if they are indeed being prosecuted or persecuted, they're going to be sent back to likely their deaths or likely to a, you know, a prison cell.
Yeah, it's probably worse for you if you try to leave and then they find out about that.
Absolutely it is. Let's see. There's other story here from CNBC. Biden administration appeals judge's order. This is from less than a week ago, to stop expelling migrants under Trump-era pandemic policy. So there was a judge who said that they need to stop using Title 42, and Biden is appealing that. So this is yet another example of how Joe Biden is more like Trumpy than the Trump haters thought that Trump was. Like, people hated Trump for all these different reasons, and Biden has continued Trump's policies and cranked them up.
Yeah, my friend sent me this weird video of Biden today. It was him when he was younger. You know, he's always been in government office, so I don't know what his title was at the time, but he was being interviewed.
Probably a senator or something.
Yeah, and he was saying, Do people think that I care more about Bosnia than Haiti because it's white people in Bosnia and it's, you know, black people in Haiti? And then he just went on and said, well, if Haiti sank into the ocean, I wouldn't care. Just like that was his answer to that. I was like, what is that supposed to mean?
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, it's clear what it means. It means he has no empathy.
Yeah.
Right? Like to say that about another, an entire group of people living somewhere on the planet, to say they just, if they just all died one day, he would have no concern whatsoever for that. And you juxtapose that against what he says while he's running for office, which is to make himself seem like this all caring, oh, we're the Democrats, we care about people.
Yeah,
well,
like,
that's clearly BS.
Like Teller from Penn and Teller thought he was going to heal us all with his love.
Is that what Teller said?
Yeah, you read that on the show. It was, remember Teller's letter, and he was saying, like, we all need a big hug
from Biden.
I remember Penn Jillette.
But Teller was, like, going along with Penn, from what I could see, so presumably Teller didn't disagree. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been in the photo op.
Yeah, I just mixed them up, sorry.
Yeah. According to the story here, CNBC, Biden administration appealing a judge's order to stop using a Trump-era pandemic policy that allows for the rapid expulsion of migrants without giving them a chance to apply for asylum. So they're using COVID as the excuse. The department's...
It's just COVID. That's why we had to have horseback riders whipping people.
Because of COVID?
It's just due to COVID.
The Department of Justice filed an appeal of U.S. District Judge Emmett Sullivan's ruling Thursday that bars the federal government from expelling migrants under the public health law known as Title 42. Sullivan ordered the ruling to go into effect in 14 days. The appeal is the latest move by the Biden administration to address the 20-year high surge of migrants from Mexico and Central America crossing the border illegally, which remains a political flashpoint between Republicans and progressive Democrats. Title 42 was first introduced by Donald Trump in March of 2020 over concerns about the coronavirus pandemic. It gave the government the power to turn back any migrant caught crossing the border illegally, regardless of their country of origin, to supposedly stop COVID-19. So if you had managed to escape from North Korea and you had made it to the United States, which is no easy task, mind you, it's one thing to get here from Haiti or Guatemala or Honduras or something. It's a whole other story to get here from North Korea. But if you'd managed to and they caught you.
Due to COVID-19, you got to go back to North Korea.
They'd send you back, yeah, to North Korea, where you would certainly either be put into a hellish prison labor camp. And then, of course, all your family members have probably already been put into a prison labor camp because that's how they roll over in North Korea. If you try to escape or you do something bad, they punish your whole family for it. So, wow. You know, you're going to prison and it's going to be like the worst possible prison labor camp experience basically on the planet right now if they don't just go right ahead and just summarily execute you.
Yeah, but this quote from a man at the border, a Haitian man, with two children, he says, the U.S. government has no conscience.
Of course not.
Of course not.
What government does have a conscience? I mean, the whole point of the idea of the state is that it's just this automaton. Even though there are human beings running it, and I had a perfect example of this the other day. You and I were sitting out. We were having dinner on my dinner out where you and I get to go on Thursday downtown and because I've got this federal ankle monitor on me, so I always have to ask permission from my federal handler to go out to eat or something like that. And one of the police officers here in Keene, Jason Short.
You know, he just assaulted our friend on March 16th, and he comes up to us.
And threatened multiple friends. He threatened Lumpy, one of our listeners and friends, out in front of the Moose Mart, out in front of the Bitcoin Embassy while the police were raiding that. And he assaulted Chris Wade, our Friday night co-host, and threatened his partner while they were out front of the studio early on the morning of the raid here in March. This guy was acting like a automaton. He had this soulless look in his eyes. He was just being absolutely horrendous, completely disrespecting their rights to be the media and record what was going on. They were trying to get video, and he kept on pushing them backwards. And as he walked up to us on the streets, he was just being Mr. Friendly.
Yep. More on that story when we come back. There's more Free Talk Live coming next. Welcome back to Free Talk Live. radio that you control, 603-283-61.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. You got it.
Oh, you scared me. Let me just try it again.
My fault.
603-283-6160, and that's the phone number you need to get on the show with us. Talk about whatever you want, whatever is on your mind. Talk about what we are talking about if you want. 603-283-6160. On the show with you tonight, it's me, Bonnie.
It's Ian.
And we are talking about the fact that Biden has turned away more asylum seekers, deported more people than Trump.
In just the first, 9 months
yep.
of presidency, he's outdone Trump's first 4 years.
Yep.
So we can talk further about that, but actually went off to a side story about the sort of automaton nature of government. You had read it. I think it was a quote from a Haitian man who was, I guess, harassed by Border Patrol, and he said that the U.S. government
has no conscience.
Yeah. Now, I don't think the Haitian government has a conscience either. I don't think the North Korean government has a conscience. The Russian government has no conscience. Even though there are human beings who are in these jobs, they are part of this crazy
system.
Religion. It's a system, but it's also like a religion.
Yeah.
Because, and you can see it really in effect in like the court system, for instance, where it's not the judge, Mr. So-and-so, Judge Burke. He's not doing things to you.
And he really doesn't believe it.
He's the court. When he's got the robe on and he's sitting up high above everybody else in the room, he is no longer, I'm using Ed Burke as an example just because longtime listeners know who that is. That's the longtime district court judge here in Keene, New Hampshire. He's since retired. But
we saw him the other day.
Yeah, he drove by the other day and we
by
waved.
Our house.
Yeah, we waved. But he's no longer Ed Burke. He's not even Judge Ed Burke. He's the court. And the prosecutor isn't Mr. Policeman, because here in, I was explaining to you, you and I were in court the other day supporting Joa, who unfortunately his car broke down, so he couldn't be here tonight. But we were there for his parking ticket, what we thought was going to be a trial, but it turned out to be an arraignment. But there's a policeman who is the prosecutor, the police prosecutor, and they're basically like a glorified plea deal taker. They're just there to call everybody's name that has a ticket or a charge against them and try to get them to take a plea. But he's not Mr. Smith, police prosecutor. He's the state.
Yeah.
And
does the state have any objection?
Correct.
No, we don't.
Like, that's how they talk.
I talk for all of the states right now.
Correct. Yeah. They literally believe this stuff. And they're not going to admit that it's a religion. But yet, you're sitting in a room with literal pews. I mean, the only thing missing are hymnals from the pews. And ultimately, that's kind of what their law books are, right? Like, they've got their religious texts, and they've got tons of them.
They just do hymns at another time during sports ball games.
That's true. Yeah, that's a good point. There's a different place and time for that sort of thing. Whereas in court, it's all about being quiet. You can't speak.
Standing up in reverence for the judge, his honor.
Which we didn't do.
Never do.
And the whole rest of the courtroom did, with the exception of us, and you know, of course, Joa and Chris Wade was present. But those guys were in the back corner, so no one else got to see them stay seated. But we were sitting up front, so everybody got to see that happen. And so, just kind of talking about this sort of automaton nature of the state.
No chewing gum.
Oh yeah. Well, you should tell the listeners what you did. It was.
I was just pretending
funny.
To chew gum because the what would you call that guy? The bailiff?
Bailiff, yeah.
The bailiff was like, just a reminder, turn all your phones off and no chewing gum in my court.
To be fair to them, Bonnie, they actually only want you to turn the phone ringers off. So you're allowed to use the phone in New Hampshire courts, whereas if you were in a Massachusetts court, they would confiscate the phone and you would not be able to use it.
Yeah, but you're not allowed to chew gum in their court, so I was just pretending to chew gum, and he kept staring at me. What was he going to do? I wasn't chewing gum. I was moving in my mouth. I don't know.
Yeah, can you imagine him, like, trying to stick his finger in your mouth or something like that? How would they, like,
yeah, exactly.
How would they
That's
prove it?
That's what I was thinking. Like, what is he going to do? I mean, how is he going to prove that I was chewing gum? Anyways. Yeah.
But these people, like, I don't know how many of them get a kick out of enforcing their arbitrary rules, but I think a good chunk of them do. They get some sort of a pleasure out of being able to, like the guy that you're talking about, the bailiff, I've had encounters with that guy for years. They've been mostly, you know, congenial. They've been mostly not nasty, right? Like, he's been okay. But for whatever reason, he decided he was going to come up and ask if we had permission to, because I had my video camera out. And he said something about, you know, do you have your paperwork or something like that?
It's not like he's the guy that you have to go through and make sure that you give him your paperwork either. He's just, you know, he was just being a busybody.
Well, technically, that is his job as a bailiff. They can demand that sort of information from somebody who wants to record a trial. But he knows who I am. He knows where I'm from. And what did I do? All I had to do was say to him, oh, yeah, registered with the Supreme Court, free Keene. And then he went away.
And he already knew that.
And of course he already knew that. So it's just like he just wanted to enforce his little thing that he could enforce or try to enforce his thing. And so just to come back around to the state as this automaton. So even though it's human beings that are doing these things, when they're in the role that they've been assigned to play, the whole idea of like acting human towards another person just seems to go out the window. They get this dead look on their face. I gave you another example of this the other day too. There was a woman that we ran into, or just I saw her. I forget which store. We were at some store,
grocery store.
And she smiled and, you know, acknowledged me and said hello. And I said hello back to her. And I said to you, that's the lady that destroyed children's chalking, basically. Not children's chalking, but there was one year at the county fair. She's like the fair supervisor who helps people find where their booth is supposed to be set up. So she's kind of like the grounds supervisor at the fairgrounds. And this isn't even a government job. This is like just a job where it's a private piece of private property, and it's the county fair is on private property here. So it's not a government agency. But although, to be fair, she is a government bureaucrat who works for the county prosecutor's office.
But people will go crazy over power in any situation where they feel like they have it, like in a church.
Yeah.
If you're the church, if you're the leader of some little part or thing that's going on, the cakewalk. People
sure.
will go crazy over power for being the cakewalk coordinator.
If they're in charge of it. Yeah. You're right about that. In fact, we've seen this in business as well during COVID, where these little power seekers, all of a sudden, they used to just be the floor manager at Walmart or McDonald's, and now they have power over people, and you better show your vaccination status. There was a video that I saw on social media the other day. Apparently, Toronto just put in their vaccination passport requirement. And there's a video of an old woman in a McDonald's being thrown out of the McDonald's because she didn't have her vaccination passport. She'd lost it or something like that. She claimed she'd been vaccinated. She was there in a mask. She was there, you know, being as obedient as she possibly could be. And she was trying to explain to this manager, and this manager just wasn't hearing it. Kicked her right out.
So many examples of state workers being automatons. I feel like we didn't even finish all of your stories you were getting to there.
Oh, there's so many stories.
So many stories. Yeah. You could just keep going. Okay,
and you can tell your story, too, if you want to.
603-283-6160. Do you have any experiences with automatons? 603-283-6160. Free Talk Live coming up.
Brute force. Intransigent defiance. Adamantine will. These are the hallmarks of the AI tank. These gigantic machines have the firepower of an army, but they also have their own sense of honor and duty. When the world breakers arrive, battle will be joined, planets will shake, and war and peace will never be the same again. World Breakers. Stories from David Weber, Larry Correa, and more. Available August 3rd from BaneBooks.com.
Welcome back to Free Talk Live. It's talk radio that you control. 603-283-6160. That's the phone number for you to call. You can get on the show with us tonight and talk about whatever's on your mind. You can give us your perspective of what we're talking about. 603-283-6160. With you in the studio tonight, it's me, Bonnie.
And it's Ian.
And I'm just going to go right into your calls. We have Kirby calling from Indiana. Kirby, you're on Free Talk Live.
Hey, Kirby.
How y'all doing?
Good. What's up?
Hey, I'm gonna be straight to it. You guys were talking about automatons.
Mm-hmm.
You know who's the worst automaton in this world?
Who?
Libertarian.
What do you mean?
Because the minute you do, most of them are absolute anarchists. I'm not. And the minute you don't toe the line on an issue that they are emotional about, they will cut you off and treat you like you are horrible. And it's ridiculous the way we are. We say we're about liberty and dealing with other people. But the minute our own people disagree with us on something, we start name calling. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I mean, everybody is on their own path, and not everybody's ever going to agree on everything. And if you can't get along with people, you really don't belong in a movement that you want to get, you know, that you want to expand. You got to be willing to meet people halfway sometimes.
Yeah, and that my way or the highway mentality does no good, especially when we're standing on the abyss of forever right now.
Mm-hmm.
We've got so much stuff coming at us, and I'll tell you what brought this up, the situation at the border. Haiti is on an island called Hispaniola, correct?
I never heard that, but I'll take your word for it. I always just thought it was Haiti.
It is. Take my word for
okay.
it. It is. Google
yeah.
it. On the other side of the island is the Dominican Republic.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay.
Haiti takes up less than a quarter of the island.
Yeah.
So how much simpler would it have been for 15,000 Haitians to walk to the border? Than it would to make it to Mexico and then to the U.S. border.
Well, what do you think the reason is that they didn't do that?
I think that they have been encouraged by a great many people that we are not seeing, because remember, there's a hidden hand that rocks the cradle. They've been encouraged to do this. And if there's 15,000, there's 500 of them in there who have been trained to do some very ugly things once they get in.
Okay.
We got to quit. You don't want America to be the world's police any more than I do, correct?
Absolutely not.
We should not be the world's orphanage either. At some point, if your home is kind of shaky, are you going to take care of it or your neighbors, and you got to choose between the two?
Yeah, you got to take care of yourself first before you can help, you know, before you can be of any assistance to anyone else. You definitely have to take care of yourself. But, you know, I think the issue of immigration comes down to, because that's why I'm hearing, you know, you're bringing up is concerns about people coming in here. The issue comes down to government welfare, because if people were able to just come here and move on to relatively unoccupied space. I mean, you think of the land west of the Mississippi, which is where they're coming in, is mostly government-owned land. It's, I think, two-thirds federal land. And so there's plenty of room out there. If they want to set up some shanty towns and, you know, create their own cities, I mean, I think they should be free to do that, don't you?
Why? No, because if that's the case, that's the Homestead Act, and it should be opened up to American citizens.
Oh, it should be open to anybody.
Yeah. It should be open to American citizens first, number one, and
sure.
I'll tell you why. I've been paying taxes to this country for 40 years. You've been paying them all your life, whether one way or another. We have skin in this game.
Yeah, but I don't have any expectation that they're going to do anything for me. You know, they're not going to help me out. In fact, they're trying to put me in a cage.
That's cool, but it should still be open to us.
Oh, yeah, I'm not denying you. Yeah, absolutely. There should be the American people and anybody else on the planet who wants to have that land should be able to take it. It should be.
Yeah, and we just brought tens of thousands of Afghans here. Someone's got to pay to feed, clothe, house them, send them to ESL class.
Well, we went over there and destabilized their country. We went over there and...
Well, I didn't go there.
Well, yeah, the government went over there.
I absolutely agree with it, Bonnie. And on that, we bear that responsibility. But we don't bear that responsibility with 15,000 Haitians.
Well, certainly the U.S. military hasn't been active, at least to my knowledge, in Haiti. But there wasn't there a rumor that the U.S. government might have been involved in the assassination of the president there?
Yeah, there was. They said the guys might have been trained. A couple of them might have been trained in America. But there are plenty of places in America where you can go drop a couple, $3,000 and get all the training you need, and it's perfectly legal. So
let me see if I understand what you're saying here. Are you saying that you think that the Haitian folks shouldn't be allowed to come into the United States because there might be some bad guys among them, or that there's welfare recipients?
I'm saying that there's a wide range of reasons for it, but if you want one, it's because they could have simply walked across their own country to a border, knocked on the door and said, hey, please help us. But instead, they had the energy to cross part of an ocean, part of the Atlantic, the Caribbean, get to Mexico and then walk to the Texas border. Couldn't that energy, stamina, strength, and determination have been used better to make Haiti a better place?
Yeah, well, I mean, for whatever reason, they chose not to do that, and I'm not going to second-guess those people.
Yeah, I mean,
okay,
they could be...
But we, the people of the United States, don't have to accept it, do we?
But what if some of us want to accept it?
Also, I don't think that I have to do anything for them.
Take that. Take as many as you can into your own home, feed them, clothe them, house them.
But these are people who are capable of working, so why shouldn't they just go to work?
They are people who are 61% literate in their own language, which ain't even Spanish. It's French Creole.
Well, that doesn't mean that they can't learn,
So the American taxpayer has to.
No, the American taxpayer needs to stop paying taxes.
Yeah, the problem is the government stealing money from the American taxpayer.
I understand that, but because they're stealing it from us, they're just going to give it to somebody else.
That's how they do, man.
Give it back.
That's what the government does. They steal from you and they give it to the politically connected classes.
And guess what? Those aren't the politically connected classes. If we, the people, ever want something, we're going to have to stand up, cross the board, and tell our government no.
That's what's going to have to happen. I don't disagree with you there.
As a distraction as well.
Well, that's the thing,
Kirby. All the other stuff that's going on.
Here's the thing. You know, Americans are too cowardly to stand up and, you know, actually oppose their government in any significant manner.
Well, yeah, because when you do, the people who are so-called on your side call you all kinds of foul names.
Well, I mean, if you can't handle some foul names.
I ain't tripping about the foul names. But my point is, we will never be able to unite as long as every time we get emotional, we want to start cutting people out.
Well, I mean, it sounds like you want to cut people out of the United States.
I'm saying that those are Haitians.
How big should the U.S. government's...
United States.
Hey, okay, but how big should the budget be for these bureaucrats on the border? You want to see bigger government?
I have no idea about the bureaucrats on the border. See, and that's what I mean, Ian. Everybody want to take it to this extreme and get it to the minutia. When the surface problem is you have 15,000 people living under a bridge. You got a binary choice.
Yeah, let them out of there.
Let them in.
Sorry, Kirby.
Send
thank you for
back.
The call, but I got to put you on hold. That's the bumper music.
I lean towards let them in.
603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live, 603-283-6160. That's the phone number you can call with your opinions about whatever we're talking about. Tonight we've been talking about Joe Biden. Apparently he's deported more refugees than Trump did in 4 years in 9 months.
To be fair, this Title 42 that they're using to deport asylum seekers specifically came into play during the so-called pandemic. So even though Trump had 4 years, he really only had like a year. So okay. Biden is still outstripping Trump, though, on this, basically, at the rate that he's deporting people.
Even if he was deporting people at the same rate as Trump, it's just kind of funny because the American voters who voted for Biden voted for him because they thought he was going to be love and light and, you know, liberty for all.
Yeah, he loves immigrants. Oh, wait, no, they're whipping them and, you know, grabbing them, deporting them, sending them back to whatever hellscape they've come from. By the way, Haiti is the poorest country in, like, the Northern Hemisphere.
Wow.
Or the Western, this area of the world. Well, very poor. And Kirby was on the line a moment ago, and he was saying that he didn't want to see these folks let in. And you were going to, I think, say something about that.
I was going to say that Kirby said that, and my opinion about it is a little bit different than Kirby's. Kirby thinks that the U.S. government owes us something because we've allowed them to steal from us all this time, and now they need to, you know, pay us back. I think that Americans need to just forget about the loss because, you know, you can't really get it back. You're not going to demand, you're going to all stand up in unison and demand the U.S. government give us something. It's just not going to happen.
Well, anything they have to give, they have already taken from somebody else. Or if they cut you a check, then they're printing more money out. So they're still taking from other people. So, yeah, I agree with you, Bonnie. You just have to let it go. Yes, they've screwed you. Yes, they've destroyed lives.
But they were never in actual agreement with you to take your money and use it for what you wanted.
Oh, of course not. They're a criminal enterprise.
No, they're just taking money from you. So
they
just
try to pretend like they're doing something good with it. You know, like, oh, well, we're helping poor people and we're helping sick people and look over here and then don't look over here at the, you know, hundreds of thousands of innocent lives.
Or the kids in cages
bombed.
Still.
Yeah. Right. Don't forget about the immigrants' kids that are in cages. Biden's continuing that policy, and the news media is basically ignoring it. So he's basically continuing some of the worst Trump policies, and he's even like coloring his skin orange now, apparently. Unless those are photoshops that I've seen online, but either way, it's funny, and you know, sad at the same time. But you know, this is an issue that does divide people in the liberty movement. Is this border control issue? And I do agree that people need to be able to work together, so I'm happy to work with Kirby on issues where we agree, but on issues where I disagree, I'm not going to help you. You know, that's like sorry, we're going to have to part ways on this one issue. I still think he's a cool guy. I like hanging out with him. He came here to visit us a few months ago.
And I don't like that people would tell him he's not a libertarian because of that, you know?
And that does get into kind of a prickly issue, because I will say that if you support the border control by the government, then no, you're not being a libertarian on that issue, in my opinion, because a libertarian is somebody that supports non-aggression. And a human being crossing an imaginary line in the sand, a government border,
I think he's
is
thinking
not an aggressive
about it the
act.
Wrong way. He thinks that we need to, you know, keep, you know, have him blocked out. I don't think, you know, I think he's thinking about it the wrong way. He thinks that they're aggressing on us by coming over and taking our things. But in reality, you know, the
Southern
Texas...
took those things.
In reality, the Southern Texas border is not somebody who lives in Indiana's. It doesn't belong to you. You know, like, people are allowed to cross that. They should be allowed to come over and get jobs. But unfortunately, the government, immigrants can't win. Immigrants living in San Antonio, they can't go.
And you knew a few of them down there.
Yeah, they can't.
When you lived there,
they can't just go and work a normal job, and you know, just apply for a normal job
right.
as easily as an American citizen.
Yeah, they can only get work where someone's willing to look the other way,
and it's usually
work there.
Crappy, and they're often abused.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
because they know that if they try to leave, the employer can go to the ICE people.
Yep, and so like if you know. If they're going on the government dole, then, you know, they kind of can't win. You know, if they are taking money
difficult.
From the government, then
yeah,
people are going to be like, oh, they're stealing from us. That's just a immigrant that's not one of us. I mean, Kirby literally said, no, those are Haitians. Well, you know what? My friend in middle school came from Haiti after the hurricane, or not the hurricane, the earthquake, the really bad earthquake. And I think it was like 2012, 2011. And he's a perfectly upstanding citizen now. He's an architect.
Well, let's clarify something. The average so-called illegal immigrant isn't taking anything on the government dole because that would put them on the government's radar.
Yeah.
And they don't want to get you know, thrown out of the United States.
Yeah, I was trying to explain that to somebody that we know.
The people that are taking government dole are the people that have come here on government programs to begin with. So, for instance, like he mentioned, Kirby mentioned the Afghans who are coming here. There may and very well be some government money, some taxpayer money that are going to support those people. Now, to be fair, they're likely going to get jobs and they're likely going to start to support themselves at some point. And of course, as you pointed out, Bonnie, they were displaced by the U.S. military's actions. So it's kind of like the least the government gang can do is to give them a place to go where they're not going to be crucified for assisting with the U.S. government's occupation in Afghanistan. So, I mean, I kind of get why they should be allowed to come here. But I totally understand where Kirby's coming from and saying, hey, he doesn't want to pay for it. Yeah. And I don't want to either.
Exactly. Stop paying taxes.
Well, and that's the thing. These people are too afraid to go up against the U.S. federal government because they don't want to go to prison. They know that if they don't pay the whatever arbitrary tax that the government gang is demanding of them, then the government gang's going to turn against them and they're going to put them in a jail cell. And there's not enough of them who are willing to gather together and actually stand up against tyranny.
They would rather, you know, just keep paying the gang and have the gang protect them from the Haitians.
Yeah, they want the gang to do their bidding. And you should know by now, the gang will not do your bidding. It doesn't matter if it's Trump or if it's Biden or whatever. The gang will do what the gang wants to do, and they'll make you pay for it.
And each of them don't feel responsible for what they're doing because they're, like we said, government automatons who are just pushing buttons to further their system.
Correct.
They all just, continue on with their jobs every day, believing that what they're doing isn't their fault because they were ordered to do it.
A lot of the people who believe in this whole border crackdown, like, you know, stop the Haitians, stop the Mexicans, etc., kind of belief system, you know, they actually believe that somehow they can be stopped. And if you actually, generally the freedom mindset is, you know, the government can't do what it wants to do. Like, they fail at whatever it is they set out to do. They failed at winning in Afghanistan, which is one of the poorest countries on earth. They failed at ending poverty in the United States. They're making it worse. They failed at the war on drugs. I mean, you name it. They can't build roads. I mean, they just suck at everything that they do. What do you think? The border control bureaucrats are all of a sudden more efficient than every other bureaucracy out there? You think you can just throw more money at ICE and that they're going to get better at what they do? No, they're just a bunch of bureaucrats, just like every other government bureaucracy. They're incredibly wasteful. They're incredibly unnecessary. And all they want to do is get bigger. So they love it when people call for more border restrictions. They want to have more men with whips on horses. They want to have more, you know, dogs, and they want to have more trucks, and they want to make things scary. And remember, the more stringent a border security force is, the more difficult it is to leave. So if there's a wall up, that wall works both ways. Do people not care about that? Do you think that's okay?
Well, they're getting money taken, or they're getting money, you know, monthly from the government. They just want to comfortably live their lives. They don't want things to change. So they probably don't think that they'll ever want to leave.
Well, look around you, because things are definitely way worse now than they've ever been in the United States. And if it isn't clear that things are getting worse here, then you're just not paying attention. And in fact, a lot more people are leaving the United States now than ever before. And you can't blame, I can't blame the Haitians for wanting to come here. In fact, wow, instead of just crossing the border to the Dominican Republic, as Kirby had suggested, they made the effort to come all the way here. That tells you that there's still this mythology around the planet that things are freer in the United States, that they would rather go through however many thousands of miles or whatever that was, that journey to get through Mexico and up to the United States to try to have a chance at getting asylum here than to, quote, just go across the border to the Dominican Republic. Now, I did try to look into, like, why somebody would want to make that decision, maybe beyond the idea that the U.S. is so much more free than the Dominican Republic. But clearly the Dominican Republic is more wealthy, way more so than Haiti. But maybe they don't give you asylum over there. Maybe they just immediately throw people back to Haiti.
Yeah, maybe they have too many Haitians trying to go over.
Yeah, they probably look down on the Haitians because, you know, they're not very well educated and they probably don't have a lot of skills. And they're like, get out of here. So maybe they thought they'd have a chance here.
Yep. 603-283-6160. More on that coming up next.
when Monster Hunter International discovers one of Isaac Newton's wardstones being auctioned off, they decide to steal it and use it to destroy the Chaos God once and for all. But a mysterious thief upends their plan, and it soon becomes a race against time as something much older and infinitely more evil awakens in the jungles of South America. Monster Hunter Bloodlines by New York Times bestselling author Larry Correa and Bain Books. Visit MonsterHunterNation.com for more.
Free Talk Live.
This is Free Talk Live. It's talk radio that you control. 603-283-6160 is the phone number you can use to call in and talk about whatever's on your mind. We've already had a little heated discussion with a caller tonight.
That's what I like.
Yep.
I like it when people don't necessarily agree. Makes for more interesting talk.
I like, you know, conversations. It's better to have a conversation than just sit around seething about disagreeing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
603-283-6160. And let's get right into your calls. We have Danny calling. Hello, Danny.
From Texas?
Oh, yeah, from Texas. Sorry, I forgot what... I didn't write it down. Sorry. Hey, Danny, you there?
Uh-oh. Oh, you pressed the wrong button. You gotta press the bottom.
I pressed
bottom
the wrong button.
There you go.
Hey, Danny, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Sorry,
hey,
about
Danny.
That.
Hey, Ian, how are you?
That's good, man. What's on your mind?
Good to hear that you are out.
Well, out for now, yes. Hopefully out for good.
Yeah. I wanted to share a little info about the border that never gets talked about.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've noticed, but they funnel them to either one end or the other. You know, first it was California for Trump to scare everybody, and then it's on Texas. Well, when I crossed in Arizona in the Nogales border, I ended up in the wrong line. I was in the trucker line. So I got rerouted over to where they check all the fruit and all that. And I ended up on the dock for about an hour, and I just start chit-chatting with the guys. I'm like, hey, how come there's no refugees around here? Where's all the people trying to sneak in? He goes, yeah, that's not around here.
Huh.
He said that anybody they catch, they send them to the other end. So they're literally bussing them in to this one point.
So they're making it look worse on purpose.
They're making it look worse than it is on purpose for political reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're just gathering people up all along the border, and they ship them all over there to make it look like some dramatic thing that's happening. And, you know, I live in Mexico half of the year, so I'm crossing the border constantly. And, you know, I don't see that anywhere where I'm crossing. There's not crowds of people hanging out other than the ones trying to sell you fruit and, you know, big hats at the bridge.
So you're saying this is true under Trump and true under Biden, where they're using the same exact tactic.
Exactly. Do you remember they did it down in San Diego or Tijuana? They were all gathered at the border, and they're all, you know, everybody's walking from South America.
Yeah, they're coming from Honduras.
It's all fabricated. You know, and as far as taking your jobs, I don't think so. I mean, I've been a roofing contractor for 30 years in Texas, and the only reason I got my roof done is because that's who showed up to do it. There's no one. They didn't steal a job that was that no one was asking for. I was begging them to come and help.
Wow.
So,
your point is that a lot of Americans don't want this kind of work, that these folks are willing to do jobs that...
Absolutely not. Yeah, they don't like concrete and concrete roofing. No one else is going to do it.
Yeah, roofing is incredibly dangerous work. It's incredibly arduous work, and it's brutal. I think roofer is like the number one most deadly job out there, if I recall the numbers correctly.
It's one of them.
Yeah,
I think it's one of them. That and cake decorator.
So,
you can lose your business.
I definitely appreciate the perspective. Now, do you think the ICE people are orchestrating this gathering of these migrants into this one place because they want to pander for, like, you know, to whatever politicians are in charge? They want to get bigger budgets. Is that what this is about? Like, hey, just give us more money and we'll take care of this.
It's to cater to the news, you know, mm-hmm. to sell the fear porn.
Yeah, scare tactic.
You know, I don't think that ICE agents are just out there, you know, trying to be malicious and, hey, let's just do this. It's, I mean, they're taking their orders from somebody. Mm. So it's from the top down. But that's what's going on. You know, ask anybody that's crossing the border anywhere, you know, other than those places that they're showing you on TV, and you're not going to see that. You're not going to see that stuff. It's fabrication.
Great point. Thanks for sharing that tonight, man. Anything else?
Ah, that's it. And it's congratulations, and hope to see you at the next Pork Fest, man.
Me too. This year. Thanks, brother. I appreciate it.
Thank you for the
call. All right, have a good one.
Yeah, and I hope you get to go to the next one because you stayed home with me.
Yeah, I've still never been to a Pork Fest. It would be fun to go with you.
You know, I found a story, Bonnie, at The Atlantic because Kirby had called in earlier. That's what got this whole conversation started about, you know, the Haitians that are trying to come in here. Like, well, how come they didn't just cross their own border on Hispaniola to the island on which Haiti is located and shares with the Dominican Republic? And it's roughly one third of the island is Haiti and the other two thirds is the DR. Why not just cross the border there? And, you know, just I speculated that, well, maybe the Dominican Republic is a particularly unwelcoming place for Haitians. And it turns out my speculation, at least according to the Atlantic story published in 2018, was correct. Do you want to hear about it?
Yeah.
So it's a story about what happens when you limit birthright citizenship and stir up hate against a certain class of immigrants. It takes place in the Dominican Republic. And like most countries in the Americas, for a century and a half, they had constitutionally guaranteed birthright citizenship for anyone born on Dominican Republic soil, with a couple of exceptions, the children of diplomats and short-term travelers. And like most other people in the Americas, Dominicans have had a more complicated relationship with immigration than the framers of the Constitution might have anticipated. The Dominican Republic has long been dependent on a stream of cheap immigrant labor that cuts its sugarcane, builds its buildings, and staffs its beach resorts that draw in billions of foreign dollars every year. Almost all of that labor comes from the only country close enough and poor enough to have people who want to immigrate in large numbers to the DR, Haiti. And some working-class Dominicans without Haitian roots resent their poorer neighbors being willing to accept lower wages and tough conditions. So, sounds familiar, right?
Yep, sounds familiar.
Many wealthy Dominicans who profit wildly off the cheap labor supply are eager to have strict immigration laws in place, too. Not because they want less immigration, but because they want a freer hand. Just like you were saying earlier, Bonnie, about people that are the employers of illegal immigrants in the United States. They like that agreement. They like being able to have that level of control over those people. Because if we had free immigration, they wouldn't have that control. Those people would be able to go work wherever they wanted to. Immigrants in the country illegally have no protection from workplace regulations and can be rounded up, deported, and replaced whenever convenient, including right before payday. The Dominican Republic also has a long, brutal history of anti-Haitian racism. During his rule from 1930 to 61, fascist dictator Rafael Trujillo built a radicalized concept of Dominican national identity on the fuzzy idea that the descendants of Spanish slavery on the eastern part of the island had higher levels of European ancestry than, and thus were superior to, the descendants of French slavery on the western part of the island, which is where Haiti ended up. This rhetoric led to a 1937 rampage in which Dominican soldiers and allied citizens massacred thousands of people they identified as Haitians. They forcibly separated people who'd long mixed together in vaguely delineated borderlands, consecrating a new national boundary that had been set largely by the occupying U.S. military a few years earlier, but which until then existed mostly on paper. In the decades that followed, Haitian migrants in the DR remained largely confined to isolated company towns in the cane fields, known as Bad Eyes. But in the late 20th century, Haitian immigrants and their Dominican-born children left to work in other parts of the Dominican economy. Nationalists who'd grown up learning Trujillo's propaganda began to rethink the law. Because they tend to be political conservatives, nationalists, they often feel pressure to pretend that the radical changes they're making aren't changes at all. So in the 90s and the early aughts, right-wing Dominican politicians tried to stretch a tiny loophole in birthright citizenship into a chasm big enough to swallow anyone of Haitian descent. Their main strategy was to claim that everyone with Haitian roots was, quote, in transit, no matter how long they or even their parents had lived in the country.
So, yeah, they're stopping people from who are born in the Dominican Republic from becoming citizens by being born there?
Correct. They also refused to issue Haitians children birth certificates or ripped up the ones that they already had. Sympathetic local media helped make synonymous the words illegal, immigrante, extranjero, foreigner, and Haitiano.
Extraño.
Even foreign reporters got used to referring to people of Haitian descent in the Dominican Republic, an estimated 500,000 to 1 million people, or roughly 10% of the total population, as, quote, Haitian migrants. Even though that category includes an estimated 171,000 Dominican-born Dominicans with two Haitian parents. We'll tell you a little bit more here because they did some horrible things. Coming up.
Welcome back to Free Talk Live, talk radio that you control. 603-283-6160. That's the call-in number that you can use to get on the show with us, talk about whatever is on your mind, give your perspective on what we're talking about, whatever you want to do. 603-283-6160. In the studio with you tonight, it's Bonnie.
And Ian.
And I want to tell you about Bitcoin.com. Bitcoin.com is the best source for learning about cryptocurrency. You can go there now and click on Get Started at the top of the page. Once you do that, you'll find all sorts of valuable information neatly organized to suit your needs. There is no longer an excuse for ignoring this important, world-changing information. If you are a knowledgeable crypto user, you can check out news.bitcoin.com to get the latest headlines of all the news that's relevant to you. Bitcoin.com is your source for everything crypto, like getting a wallet app, mining, trading, and all the latest cryptocurrency news, all in one slick and easy-to-use website, Bitcoin.com.
So we've been talking about Haiti and the Dominican Republic, and what spurred this, I mean, I wasn't planning to talk about this tonight, but I did a little bit of searching around after Kirby called in and suggested that there was some sort of dastardly, like, conspiracy.
Soros.
Maybe. Maybe that's true.
I don't know.
He didn't
say George Soros, but that's just kind of usually what you hear about. Oh, George Soros paid these Honduran people to come up here. George Soros, you know, paid the protesters, you know.
Yeah, I don't know what spurred this to happen, but according to some of the news in the last several years, it's pretty clear that the country, the government gang in the Dominican Republic is not friendly at all towards Haitians. So maybe they...
Oh, yeah, you're saying that because Kirby called and said that the Haitians who were coming up through the Texas border, they put a lot of effort to come all the way to the United States when they could have just walked right over to the Dominican Republic, which is on the same island as Haiti. That's what Kirby said, but...
Suggesting that it would just be like, you know, a walk in the park to just easily cross over into the Dominican Republic. And while there might not be a wall there at this moment, that certainly doesn't mean that it's an easy thing to do, or that if they are discovered that they will be welcomed in any way, shape, or form to the Dominican Republic. And what we're sharing is an article from The Atlantic written in 2018 about how, in fact, in the last few decades, the country in the Dominican Republic has been particularly nasty.
Yeah, sounds like
to Haitians.
They started a culture of racism.
They got rid of birthright citizenship. And look down their noses at Haitians.
They look down at their noses at Haitians because they believe that it's better to be Spanish than to be French.
Yeah, they're suggesting that there's more European in the people in the DR rather than in Haiti, and so therefore they're superior and whatever. I mean, there's always excuses for racism, right?
Yeah.
And so they have their own. Well, the courts didn't like what the Dominican Republic did. And this was in the 1990s and the early 2000s. This was when the Dominican Republic politicians tried to stretch a loophole in birthright citizenship to claim that anyone from Haiti was considered in transit, meaning that they weren't there permanently. They were just there visiting. So therefore, they can't be considered citizens due to birthright if they had children. And they literally like tore up children's birth certificates and essentially tried to recategorize hundreds of thousands of people. Now, international courts didn't like this. The Inter-American Court of Human Rights ruled that the Dominican government's treatment of people of Haitian descent violated not only international human rights law, but also the Dominican Constitution. In response, Dominican presidents ignored the rulings and ultimately pulled out of the treaty establishing the court itself. In 2010, the government called a constitutional convention in large part to exclude a new group from the birthright citizenship clause, the children of anyone, quote, residing illegally in Dominican territory, unquote. Given the spotty distribution of birth certificates, faulty census taking, and lackluster registration efforts in the country's impoverished areas, this change was bound to create widespread confusion, but the government's target wasn't poor people in general, it was people of Haitian descent. But even that maneuver wasn't enough. Under all international or national norms, the new provision could only apply to people born after the new constitution came into force. But Dominican nationalists were more concerned about adults than they were of newborns. Fortunately for them, the new loophole had a loophole. A new constitutional tribunal, separate from the existing Supreme Court, given the definitive and irrevocable right to interpret the Constitution. In one of its first acts, the tribunal's justices, picked by former President Leonel Fernandez and a small group of other leaders, took up the languishing case of a Dominican of Haitian descent named Juliana de Guy Pierre. She had sued when officials in her town refused to give her a national ID card, needed to vote and access social services, because, she said, of her dark skin and Haitian last name. Instead of ruling on whether she'd been discriminated against, in 2013, the tribunal declared she should never have had citizenship in the first place because her parents didn't have sufficient documentation to prove residency when she was born. Then they went even further, ruling that all of those who could not prove that their parents had been legal residents when they were born, going all the way back to 1929, when that in-transit exception was added to the Constitution, were not citizens. Those affected were ordered to register with the government as foreigners by June 17th of 2015. And you know, good things always happen when large groups of ethnic people are forced to register with the government. Again, this order was clearly aimed at people of Haitian descent. Hundreds of thousands who had been Dominican citizens all their lives suddenly risked being rendered stateless and eligible for deportation. And where are they going to get sent to? The poorest country on the planet, right next door, Haiti, the place they tried to escape. It was obvious to human rights groups, the United Nations, and pretty much anyone watching what the Dominican government was doing was an end run around some of the most important principles of the rule of law, namely that you can't change the rules and then go around punishing people for having violated them in the past. The tribunal bent over backward to argue that nothing had changed while taking 147 pages to explain the new situation. A fundamental fact that sometimes gets missed in discussions about laws and court rulings is they're just words on paper. What those words signify to the people they govern is often just as important as what the law actually says. For instance, in the original 1865 jus soli, or place of birth, birthright citizenship provision in the Dominican Republic, enacted 3 years before the U.S. emerged from the Civil War with a 14th Amendment and its own provision, signaled a vision of the new Dominican state as a place open to just about everyone. As the historian Anne Eller has written, the provision came in a moment of heightened international cooperation when Haitians, who had thrown off French colonialism and slavery more than 60 years earlier, helped Dominicans win their final and lasting independence from Spain.
That's interesting.
The 2010 Constitution and the tribunal's subsequent ruling signaled the opposite, that the Dominican Republic should be a place where poorer, blacker, and more vulnerable workers, the Haitians, were not welcome. And Dominican nationalists were determined to push that message to the hilt. Armed with the new ruling, known simply as La Sentencia, literally the verdict, the whole country seemingly prepared itself for a mass expulsion. The military-ready deportation buses and border processing centers, sounds familiar, for the 2015 registration deadline in June. Online trolls threatened critics and spread racist invective. Facebook and Twitter were filled with an ultra-nationalist, anti-Haitian narrative of Dominican history, which erased historic alliances and played up real and imagined abuses. Many pushed their completely unfounded belief that the true intention of Haitian immigrants and their children was to conquer the Dominican Republic and raise Haiti's flag over the entire island. Doesn't this sound just like the, you know,
scare tactics?
Yeah, the scare tactics from the ultra-rights in the United States that, oh my God, La Raza, Mexico's going to come and, you know, raise the Mexican flag. Yep. We hear all of this.
All right, 603-283-6160. You can call in with whatever's on your mind.
After a devastating war, the alien visitors were driven back, and their willing human collaborators were left behind to face the music. When Imogene Anderson's ex-lover springs her from prison, Nathan Foster and his 14-year-old nephew, Ben, are tasked with bringing the pair to justice. An easy enough job, until they discover something is inside Imogene, and the fate of the planet hangs in the balance. The Family Business, by Mike Cooperi, from BaneBooks.com.
Radio that you control. 603-283-6160. That's the phone number you can call to get on the show with us tonight. 603-283-6160. In the studio tonight, it's me, Bonnie.
It's Ian.
And I want to tell you about Intercoin. Last year, we told you about Intercoin, which can help any business and organization launch their own currency or raise money using their own token. Now, Intercoin.org has launched worldwide. Sorry, I'm a little distracted. I said Intercoin. I just saw .org and it made me say Intercoin. So now Intercoin.org has launched worldwide. Is there a token you want to launch or an app you want to build? Go to Intercoin.org, enter your email, and the team will get in touch and learn about your needs. And while you're there, if you want, get some Intercoins for yourself.
Indeed. So 603-283-6160 is the number here. So, Bonnie, we've been talking about the story from The Atlantic, which, like I said, didn't come in here planning to discuss what things are like between Haiti and the Dominican Republic, but we had a caller.
Yeah, I didn't even know much about it. I mean, anything about it until tonight.
No, I mean, I was aware that the two countries had split an island, but it had to be brought to my attention again. It wasn't something that, like, when I think of Haiti, I don't think, oh, they're next door to the Dominican Republic. I almost never hear news about either of those two places. But Kirby brought it up earlier tonight, and the island is indeed shared. And his point was, well, why don't the Haitians just cross the border into the Dominican Republic?
Yeah, he implied that there was something shady going on because of that. He was saying, like, oh, there must be a reason they're coming all the way to America instead of just crossing the border, because he was acting like it was easy.
Right. Well, suggesting it was easy to cross to the Dominican Republic.
Yeah.
And no, actually turns out that the Dominican Republic is a very unfriendly place if you're a Haitian. It is full of people who are very nasty, and they have managed to get in control of the government there. So, you know, it might not have been like this in the 1800s when both sides of the island were relatively friendly toward one another, and things have deteriorated to the point where people who are nationalists of the Dominican Republic, a lot like American nationalists who believe that this should be some sort of a closed club.
Yeah, like as if it's a, you know, as if it matters where you were born on a map.
Some people seem to think so for whatever reason. They've got all their reasons, whether it's, oh, they're going to try to, you know, commit terrorism on us, or they're going to take our jobs. We had another call point out tonight. They're not taking American jobs. They're taking jobs that Americans don't want.
Yeah, and where I'm from in San Antonio, immigrants are often the people feeding people in the kitchens and, you know, in cook positions in restaurants. I worked in several restaurants.
Which is not necessarily a job that is unwanted by Americans, but they're definitely working, you know, in some roles where you can't find Americans who are willing to step up.
I mean, I think a cook is a pretty hard job, and
it's not easy. There's no doubt about it.
And also, you know, they're the type of people that own businesses that will only hire. I don't know about only, but they'll hire immigrants because they know they can overwork them, not give them overtime,
pay them under the table.
Pay them under the table and not have to give them overtime and stuff like that. And they maybe don't know how to stand up for themselves against their work or bosses.
Or they're afraid to stand up for themselves.
Yeah, they're afraid to stand up for themselves because they could get tattled on. So yeah, a lot of the times immigrants take jobs that Americans don't want.
And the same thing happens in the Dominican Republic, at least according to the story here. It's a very detailed piece from The Atlantic that we're sharing, published back in 2018, talking about how the Dominican Republic changed their constitution a couple of decades ago, and they basically ex post facto which is like, that's
after the fact.
Yeah, that's it's not Italian, it's Latin, and it means after the fact. And there's like this long held legal maxim basically that says you can't apply a new legal change ex post facto. You can't go back in time and say, well, now all these people that that migrated here legally are no longer legal. And that's what they did basically in the Dominican Republic. And they demanded in 20 that everybody who met this new definition would have to register with the
foreigner.
Government. Yeah, would register with the government by June 2015. And according to the story here, many Dominicans aren't bigoted against immigrants. But as the deadline in 2015 neared, the voices of liberals and moderates were drowned out in a sea of nationalist invective. The government framed the growing criticism of their policies as, quote, an international campaign to discredit the Dominican Republic, unquote. Nationalists simply branded those who disagreed with them as traitors. Emboldened by their government, sensing the moment was at hand, armed nationalists marched through a Dominico-Haitian barrios and towns. In February of 2015, a Haitian man was lynched in the center of the country's second largest city, Santiago. When television footage of his body left dangling from a tree spread across the country, Santiago police blamed two undocumented Haitian immigrants for the crime. Dominican nationalists held a rally nearby and burned the Haitian flag. Under pressure from the international community and fearing tourism boycotts, the president caved somewhat. He proposed a second registration program that would offer a path back to citizenship to some of the people his government had just made stateless. The details were confusing, but that was the point. Hundreds of thousands of people of Haitian descent in the Dominican Republic now lived in a state of institutionalized terror, enforced by the police, the military, and vigilante mobs. Instead of the feared one-day mass expulsions that had drawn so much attention, Dominican authorities took a quieter approach. They deported an estimated 70,000 to 80,000 people of Haitian descent, more than a quarter of the entire Dominico-Haitian population, piecemeal over the next 3 years.
Wow.
So they didn't just go door-to-door one night and round everybody up. They went and got people one at a time over a period of 1,000 days, roughly. Tens of thousands more felt they had no choice but to escape back across the border on their own.
Back to Haiti?
Back to Haiti. In late 2015, the author says he visited some of the makeshift camps at the Haitian border that were home to thousands of people who had fled for their lives. Many had never been to Haiti before, and they didn't know where to go. They'd taken shelter. They'd lived there their whole lives in Dominican Republic and then became illegal. Many had never been there before. They had taken shelter in shacks made of cardboard boxes, tree branches, old clothes, and whatever other scraps they could find. Food was scarce. The shacks frequently burned down. People were forced to get their water from a dirty river. He says he'd met a couple whose son had just died from cholera. Many in the camps told me they hoped the situation would soon calm down and they could return to the Dominican Republic. I doubt many have. According to Human Rights Watch, the Dominican government has only restored citizenship to about 19,000 of those denationalized in the 5 years since La Sentencia. Violence continues to break out between nationalists and people of Haitian descent along the border. Fear runs high, and one leader of the Dominican hard right has proposed building a border wall. Nor are there any clear signs that the purges and intimidations have helped non-Haitian Dominicans. Largely thanks to the fact that Americans and Europeans still flock to the country's all-inclusive resorts, the Dominican economy is still growing. Although, after COVID, I suspect that's not true anymore because people stopped traveling. So that may have changed things a little bit. On the eve of the feared mass expulsions, to drive home the absurdity and danger, the renowned Haitian-American author Edgewidge Danticat compared the situation to a wild hypothetical. Quote, "It's as if the United States said, yes, everybody who's been here since 1930, you have to prove you're a citizen. You have to go back to the place where you come from to get a birth certificate from there."
Even if you've never lived in this place.
Yep. For some Americans, that was not a joke. It was an aspiration. Breitbart readers roared their approval for the Dominican strategy under an article about the planned expulsions in June of 2015. Several weighed in with racist invective about the black Haitian people, quote, get some Dominican Republic, unquote, one commenter wrote. Another felt inspired, saying, it's past time that we end birthright citizenship here in the U.S. I wouldn't be as extreme as DR was, ending it retroactively for anyone born after 1929. Seems a bit harsh.
Well, why? Isn't that what most, you know, Breitbart right-wing people believe in, is birthright? My birthright. I was born here. I'm from here.
What else
makes you from a place?
They want to get rid of that. This guy says he would have no problem ending it for anyone born after 1980.
All right, 603-283-6160. More Free Talk Live coming up. That's the call-in number you can call to get on the show with us tonight. This is Free Talk Live. 603-283-6160. In the show, or in the studio with you tonight, it's me, Bonnie.
And it's me, Ian.
And we've been talking all night about immigration. Mostly started off with the fact that Joe Biden, under this new executive order, right? It was an executive order that Trump signed.
I'm not clear on that. They keep referencing Title 42 in this CNBC article, but it says it was introduced by Trump, so it must be an executive order. It's just not. Why is it called Title 42? That sounds like part of a code, or like U.S. code or something.
Anyway, something that Trump started, it was a way to make it easier to deport refugees.
Right. Basically, they said that due to COVID, we want to be able to just deport anybody who comes in without ever asking any questions, even if they say they're here for asylum. Even if they're being persecuted by the government gang from whence they come.
Yeah, no matter what government gang either.
Yeah, anybody at all. So not just Haitians, not just Mexicans, but, you know, North Koreans or whoever it is. If they show up during COVID, we can just say, you're gone, and send them back. And that's according to the numbers here cited by CNBC. In the Trump administration, they used this over 444,000 times. Against 444,000 migrants were sent back across the border using Title 42. And now, under Biden, the supposed pro-immigration guy, in just the first 9 months of his presidency, over 690,000 migrants have been expelled through this very same policy.
Yep, so that's what we started off talking about during the first hour, and then we got some calls. People chimed in with their opinions. We had a call from our friend Kirby, and he says that he believes that the United States, shouldn't be...
I'm not the United States.
I know, but I'm just explaining what I mean by that. Mm. The United States shouldn't... Well, you know, he was saying we shouldn't be
taking... It's a common thing, and I don't like it personally. I try to stay away from associating myself with those people because I'm not part of them. I don't want to be... I'm not the government. I don't consider myself the government. I don't want them to have any role in my life, and I certainly don't want to be, you know, we. I don't want to be in them. I don't want to be part of them. I want them to leave me alone.
Yeah, it's funny because these migrants that are in the news right now, the Haitians that are... coming over seeking asylum and getting whipped with actual whips by ICE agents on horseback.
And then sent back by the thousands to Haiti.
And then sent back in like, I think it went up to 6,000. Anyways, I forgot where I was going with that.
I don't know. You were talking about the getting whipped and rounded up.
They're coming over the Texas border. Well, I left Texas in January. What does it have to do with me? What does it have to do with somebody, you know, who's always lived their life in Indiana? It has nothing to do with any of those people.
But it does when they're all being forced to pay for it.
But are they?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the federal government is forcing millions of people in this country who pay taxes to support
this. Can force you to do anything.
Well, they can. I mean, if you don't pay them, they can put you in a cage. I mean, and even if you don't pay them, they can still force you to pay for it if you're using the dollar by inflating the money supply.
You know, Kirby and lots of other people who talk about these type of situations talk about, us, the United States citizens, mm-hmm. need to stand up and tell the government what we want them to do, i.e., we want them to turn around these Haitian immigrants or whatever it is that,
that
we...
That seems to be what they're doing.
What we want them to do. Whatever it is that the United States citizens, especially like Republicans, want in that moment. We need to stand up and tell our government what we want because we pay them. But they also won't just stand up together and say, we're not paying you guys anymore. Leave us alone.
Yeah, why not?
Because they're cowards. Mm. Because, I mean, seriously, that's why nobody has really convinced me. I've been saying it the last few shows I've been on. It just occurred to me one day, really nobody can force you to do anything. They can threaten you that if you don't do something they want you to do, that they'll do something to you. It's still your choice.
Yeah, that's true. It always is your choice. Even if they put you in a cage, you know?
Yep.
When I was in the cage after they raided our house back in March, they said, you have to put a mask on when you're in jail. And I said, I've got a medical exemption. And so I didn't. Now, they put me into 23-hour lockdown because of that, but I never did put a mask on at any point while I was in that building, and they never let me out of 23-hour lockdown, although, to be fair, they did try to put me in an open population at one point, but...
It seemed like a mistake or something.
I don't think it was a mistake. I think they wanted to see if I would put the mask on because they told me that... So what they did was they'd held me in 23-hour lockdown for weeks, and then they put me in this, like, open cell with 40 guys, basically, in, like, bunk beds. And they said, you have to stay in your little cubby hole unless you put a mask on. Then you can come out and you can use the phone. You can use the bathroom. You can, you know, do anything you want. Just put the mask on. And, of course, I didn't. And they said, well, we're going to write you up if you come out. Because I kept coming out of the little cubby holes. I wanted to go to the bathroom, right? At some point, I've got to pee. So as I went to the bathroom, I didn't put a mask on. And they're glaring at me. And I would walk around the cell block just to get a little bit of exercise. The guards. I'd walk around the cell block to get a little bit of exercise. And then they're like, you can't do this. You can't get out from your little, for lack of a better term, cubbyhole. It wasn't a cell. It's open, right? There's no cell door on this place. And then I was on the phone trying to make some phone calls. I think I was on the phone with you at one point. And they came over and told me I had to get off the phone because, you know, you won't put a mask on. And I never did put a mask on. And ultimately, I said, look, you're going to have to transfer me out of here because you're not even allowed. Like, I had more freedom on 23-hour lockdown because at least then I had an hour out where I could make a phone call without wearing a mask. And so eventually, like a couple hours later, amazingly, they did transfer me out of there. And I spent the rest of the time in 23-hour lockdown. But it's to your point that they didn't make me. They did try to incentivize me. And that's ultimately what they're trying to do to everybody in the United States when it comes to masks and to getting vaccines. They want to convince you to do it.
And even if somebody went up to you, a guard went up to you and forced a mask on your face and taped your hands behind your back, mm-hmm. still not making you. That's doing something to you, not you putting a mask on yourself.
That's true.
So that's why I just really don't think that anybody can make you do anything. Mm. And I've been saying that because my little brother, he's in the Air Force. And I've been, you know, sending him all the information I can possibly help him with to try to help him get out of having to get the shot because he doesn't want to take the shot. The COVID vaccine. Well, you know, it's not a vaccine. The shot.
Yeah.
The mRNA.
Whatever it is.
Gene therapy poison. And he at first was just like, yeah, it's not happening. I'm not going to take it. They can kick me out if they want. And then he kind of got a little, you know, flip-floppy on me. And he was like, well, at this point, it looks like they might just make me. And that's just, nobody can make
that's
you put something.
He's giving up.
Yeah, well,
right?
I think he's kind of he's going through with, like, trying to get an exemption now. So we'll see how that goes. But, you know, in that moment, it made me realize, like, man, people will just, you know, give away, like, their own autonomy just in the name of somebody made me do it.
Mm-hmm.
And no, it doesn't work like that.
You're choosing to go along with it.
You're choosing to go along with it.
There was a related story about that, Bonnie. MilitaryTimes.com, service members who refuse to get vaccinated against COVID-19 will not face dishonorable discharge under a plan approved by a House panel on Wednesday.
Oh, it got approved? I remember hearing...
It's approved by a House panel. That doesn't mean that it's full-on a done deal. They are apparently putting it into the defense authorization bill. So this is like a yearly thing that goes through, I think, where they sort of continually reauthorize the existence, the budget, but also the existence of the military, because constitutionally the army isn't supposed to actually exist. with the exception of when it's called to exist. So the Navy is constitutional, if I recall correctly, but the military itself, like the Army and the Marines and all that stuff, those are only supposed to be called together for the purpose of war. And they were only supposed to stay together, I think, for like 2 years maximum. And then they're supposed to disband.
Yeah, that's why I just think it's so weird that my little brother, his job in Arizona, he's in the Air Force, and his job is working on planes that go and rescue people, like in the United States. Like, there was a flood in Arizona, and a plane he worked on went and rescued some people. Why do we have the government doing that instead of just like private companies? It's just weird.
Well, because people look to the state. I mean, they pay taxes and they expect services, even though there's no obligation to provide them at any point. But there's a possibility that these guys could get a dishonorable discharge. And
for not taking the shot.
For not taking the shot. And so some of the people in Congress are saying, hey, let's not do that. And they're trying to move this into passing.
Well,
at this point, they could get it, though. They could get a dishonorable right now.
And that's Biden's decision, right? Didn't he have a quote saying that he wanted that?
I couldn't find it.
Okay. That might have been just a tweet.
Yep.
603-283-6160. Call in with any of your experiences or perspectives. Free Talk Live is coming up next.
This message is for you if you are a polyamorous person or you're in an open relationship and you are struggling with jealousy, loneliness, and communication problems. Hello, my name is Jeremy West, and I am a polyamory coach with degrees in psychology and communications and 5 years of experience with polyamory. And for a limited time, I'm teaching a free online class just for polyamorous people or people in open relationships, where you will discover a new, simpler, and unique way to uncover the secret that experienced poly people know about jealousy that you must know too. Stop feeling lonely when your partner is out with another partner, and use the four key elements that will change the way you communicate forever. No more crying yourself to sleep when you're alone for a night, a weekend, or longer, and wondering if it's better to go back to a monogamous relationship. Sound good? Well then, go to jeremywest.net/free class and register for my class now. Again, that's jeremywest.net/free class. jeremywest.net/free class.
Free Talk Live.
Welcome back to Free Talk Live, talk radio that you control. 603-283-6160. That's the number you can call to get on the show with us tonight. 603-283-6160. In the studio with you tonight, it's me, Bonnie.
It's me, Ian.
And we're going to go straight to your calls and your thoughts. We have Major Payne calling in. Major Payne, you're on the phone with us.
Hey, peace, people. Yeah, I'm calling in, I guess, about resistance to the vaccinations. I got 6 grandchildren. One of them was vaccinated at the age of 18 months.
Wow.
And she became autistic.
It wasn't with the COVID vaccine, right?
No,
it was MMR.
The standard MMRI, measles, mumps, and rubella.
Okay.
And, you know, things we've all had, you know, akin to the polio shot. Things that are not supposed to affect us. But yeah, anyway, she ended up being autistic.
Mm-hmm.
And evidently there's 4 different levels. Well, she's a L2, and she's got ADHD, she's got ADD, she's got PTSD, she's got developmental disorders. And today, my daughter and her child's father were both pretty well large framed. They were short. My daughter's not short, but anyway. So to this child at this point going crazy is you're dealing with a baby Huey.
And, what do you mean, baby Huey?
You've never seen the cartoon. You don't know who baby Huey is.
You mean Who Framed Roger Rabbit? No.
No.
Something
this
else.
Is before. This is back in Warner Brothers or one of them days.
Huey, I forget. Dewey,
anyway, I'm sure I've seen the character. I just don't remember.
It's a very large, out of control subject.
Okay.
That it is in a diaper and you don't feel like you have the right to touch it. That's baby Huey.
Okay.
And so anyway, this child had a meltdown in the school. And they had to call in the police.
Oh, boy.
The people in the school system felt they had the right to restrain her or paddle her or whatever. And
call in the men that have absolutely no training on how to deal with someone like this.
Yeah. And this is just a kid that's freaking out.
Mm-hmm. So what happened?
So all she wants to do is crawl in a hollow log.
Okay.
Oh, good God.
So what happened when they called the cops?
Well, I don't know. I wasn't there, dude. This is in Arizona. I'm in Michigan.
Oh, okay. So you didn't hear that they arrested her or anything like that?
No. Well, she's now in a facility. Mm-hmm. And my daughter has been begging anybody that would listen for some help for, hell, 10 years. And now that it's finally in the hands of the Almighty, well, somebody paid attention. Good God, how could that have happened?
What kind of facility did they put her into? Like a state run?
I don't know, dude. I just got this call from my daughter tonight. I'm still in tears.
That sucks. I'm sorry to hear about that.
Anyway, as far as these Haitians underneath the bridge down there in Tejas, the man behind the curtain. You know as well as I do, it ain't a man, it's men. But going back to the Wizard of Oz analogy, beware of the man behind the curtain. I don't know if you guys have ever checked that opening scene out, but all the Tin Man and the Scarecrow and the fireball head flames up, the only one that runs to the true sense of the matter is Toto. He smells him. And he goes and runs up there and he yips. And then Dorothy goes and rips back the screen. Oh, the man behind the curtain. Yeah.
Thank you for the call, man. Definitely definitely appreciate it.
So
you've seen that, right?
No, remember, I've told you I've never seen The Wizard of Oz. You just wanted me to say that.
No, I don't remember. I'm sorry. I should presume you haven't because you really haven't seen a lot of movies.
I just really like movies.
It's a good one, especially when you you can also watch it along with the Pink Floyd album, Dark Side of the Moon, which is kind of fun.
I've seen the Muppets version with Miss Piggy.
I didn't know there was one.
Yep. I think it has Whoopi Goldberg.
Hmm.
Anyways, I think he was getting to a point, but he kind of forgot about it because, well, when I screened his call, he was saying that, you know, people have good reason to not want to be forced to take a vaccine. And
you know,
his point about his granddaughter who became autistic after getting the MMR.
There's a lot of people who believe vaccines lead to autism.
Yeah, apparently she has a lot of other issues, too. Who knows, you know, the truth behind all that.
But I don't know, but I don't do the research. I don't have kids, so this isn't something I'm going to have to confront. I did receive the usual vaccinations of a child of the 80s, so nowhere near as many as they give to kids today. I'm okay, thank goodness. But there's a lot of people that do believe that that vaccinations lead to autism, and I presume that they've looked at some level of evidence for this. Now, of course, correlation isn't necessarily causation, so you can't really say for sure, but there's some interesting correlations there.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of an anomaly. I'm a libertarian female who was born in 1996, and I'm not autistic.
Right, yeah.
And
we took the test online.
I never got any of the shots, so correlation's
maybe
not causation, but...
Yeah. Who
just
knows?
Kidding. Who knows? Who actually knows? But I think he was also getting to another point. He was going to say that there's a man behind the curtain helping immigrants end up in the United States under the bridge in Texas. I don't even think those are Haitians. Like, those are two separate groups he was putting together. But I don't know. I just think
That the people under the bridge are Haitians, aren't they?
Oh, they are? Oh, I don't know.
I don't know either. It's hard to keep track of all the news.
Yeah, it is hard to keep track of the news. I thought he was mixing two together. I just think that there shouldn't be interference at all with this, you know, situation. There should just be people allowed to come in who are allowed to work, who are, you know, allowed to just
and
get
no
a job
welfare.
And not be...
And no welfare.
No welfare handed to them, but also don't keep them from being able to be productive.
Right.
The United States does that to immigrants.
They make life more difficult for them, and therefore life more difficult for all of us, because we could use their services. We could use the work ethic that some of these guys have to, like, you know, we had caller point out tonight, he wanted to get some roofing work done, the only people who would show up were Mexican immigrants. Illegal
Texas,
ones.
Well, we have more on this story about the military possibly. Well, there was rumors, who knows if it's really something Joe Biden said, but there were rumors that military members who refused the shot were going to get dishonorably discharged.
Yeah, it hasn't happened yet at this point, but it could happen. There is that possibility. And there apparently was a woman who refused to wear a mask in the military. Like, as and just a few weeks ago, she was discharged from the military over this. Like, she, you know, supposedly she had to wear a mask indoors, and she was like, nope, not going to do that. And so they just kicked her out. Now, I think
was it dishonorable?
I think she got like a normal general discharge. So no, it was not dishonorable in that case. But that just goes to show that, look, if you want to get out of the military, here's a way to do it.
Yeah, just don't wear a mask.
If you don't, yeah, if you don't want to be part of a force of people that kills innocents all around the planet, and specifically in the Middle East, and you don't want to be part of the force that will likely be used to suppress the United States people, because who else are they going to use besides the police? They're going to put the military in the streets. If people rise up in the United States, as some people would like to see happen, and again, I'm not in favor of violence, but if people rise up in a peaceful manner and start marching through the streets, you don't think they're going to call in the military? They're going to ignore Posse Comitatus and just, you know, roll out the troops and roll out the tanks? I bet you they will.
Yeah, I'd rather have less people in the military, but...
Yeah, so if you want to get out of the United States military, then maybe this is, you know, a legitimate method to do that.
I'm sure if you stay in and get the shot, you just get a saline solution anyway.
You think so?
I'm not actually sure. I don't know.
Quote, I believe that the military should be able to require these vaccines, and I think every person of sound judgment in this country should take the vaccine, said Representative Mike Rogers, Republican from Alabama. But he also said, and he's on the Armed Services Committee in the House, quote, however, if somebody in good faith in the military says they can't do it, they shouldn't be stained for the rest of their lives with a dishonorable discharge, which basically is like receiving a felony.
All right, more on that coming up next, 603-283-6160. If you want to call and get on the show with us with your opinions, more Free Talk Live coming up next. Welcome back to Free Talk Live. Talk radio that you control. 603-283-6160. That's the call-in number for you to call in and get on the show with us and talk about whatever is on your mind. Talk about whatever we're talking about with your perspective. Bring up a whole new topic. Whatever you want. 603-283-6160. In the studio tonight, you've got studio dog Coconut, me, your host Bonnie.
And Ian.
And we've been talking tonight a lot about immigration, a lot about the government, you know, overreach in general. And we've brought up the point that people could stand together just opposing the government altogether from, you know, bullying them, taking their money. But instead they want to stand up to tell the government what they want the government to do for them. That seems to be... You know, it seems to be something that everybody says the leftists do, but the right-wingers do the same thing. Try to stand together and tell the government, we want you to close the borders. We want you to do this because we paid you.
When has that ever worked?
Never worked.
When has the government gang ever done what you wanted them to do the way you wanted them to do it?
Well, you're paying them, Ian. That's
you sure are.
And mythology.
They have, and they have no obligation whatsoever to do anything for you.
Yeah, if you didn't sign a contract with these people.
No, and they wouldn't sign an agreement. And if there was an agreement, it would be like the military one, where basically they can change the terms anytime they want to. Mm-hmm. So when you join the military, you agree to the United States Code of Military Justice, the UCMJ or something like that. And that is their set of rules. You don't get to change the rules, but they can. So if they want to change all their rules, you know, in one fell swoop, they can do that. If the Congress wants to come in and make it so it's a guaranteed dishonorable discharge if you don't get the vaccine, they can do that. Now, they're trying to stop that from happening,
some
supposedly. And maybe that'll be the case. But anyway.
Anyways, what I was going to say was, if you want a chance to stand up together against the government, as in, you know, telling them to leave you alone peacefully, I think the only chance for that is moving to New Hampshire. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I would agree, but only if you love liberty. Like, if you are somebody that wants the government to do what you want them to do, like deport people or tax people or create new welfare programs or whatever.
Close the border.
Yeah, whatever lefty or righty program that that you want them to do, you really don't belong in New Hampshire. You belong in either Texas or in California. Or Florida, depending on your... So if you're like a leftist, get to California. Man, that's paradise for a leftist. If you love conservatism, get to Texas. Get to South Dakota or Florida. Any one of those is a better choice than places like New York or California for a conservative. But if you love liberty, there's no other choice besides New Hampshire.
Yep. I wanted to read this letter. It's like some kind of an open letter on a... What is this? It's not the Shire.
This is a Reddit post.
Oh, this is a Reddit post that was reposted by some Liberty website.
Oh, was it reposted? Oh, no, that's a Reddit that golden you're looking at there.
Oh, that's their... Okay, never mind.
Yeah, the Golden Black Reddit, which is a, I think, anarcho-capitalist Reddit.
Okay, this person's opinion is, it drives me nuts watching typical GOP conservatives fight for freedom and liberty more vehemently than lots of libertarians are. Would you hire a fat personal trainer? Let's say you wanted to lose weight.
No, I would not.
No, I wouldn't either. Let's say you wanted to lose weight and are in the market for hiring someone to help you out. All else being equal, would you choose someone who is in shape or is way too large around the middle section, has a stoma in their neck, and smells a bit off?
Yeah, I would not choose that person.
Maybe the fat trainer has all the right knowledge. Maybe they've studied for years and years, just never bothered putting any of the ideas into practice. Maybe the idea of being healthy is something they find interesting, but not something that they care to experience. To them, it's an academic and intellectual pursuit. They enjoy researching, studying, and debating what makes a person healthy. They know all about how various diets can affect the body. They know how the proper form, or they know the proper form for exercises. They know the right mentality to have to pursue excellent health. They can tell you about it, but they don't bother actually implementing it for themselves. Would you trust that personal trainer? I'm going to go out on a limb and say I wouldn't. I'd probably go with the guy that seems healthier.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, the person that's actually put their theories into action.
Yep. It seems to me that a lot of libertarians are the fat personal trainer. They love the ideas of liberty. They think those are awesome. They read Rothbard and Mises and can tell you about business cycle theory. They will wax poetic. That's what it says. They will wax poetic about what the proper opinion is, whether such and such violates the NAP, their
that's
evictionists.
That's the non-aggression principle.
Have theories about age of majority and contract laws and are in the community, but they don't actually do anything to push for liberty.
Mm-hmm.
Feds.
Yeah, I mean, it frustrates me as well, and I kind of get this feeling whenever I go to like a libertarian convention. I feel like everybody there is backpatting each other for how much they care about freedom, but they think that going to a convention is doing something, and it's like, that's not good enough. You've got to do more than that.
Yeah, when I first became a libertarian in 2016, like, I came from the right. Mm-hmm. I was always just, like, believed what my parents believed Fox News was probably pretty much right. It just was so obvious that the left was wrong to me. The only other answer was the right. And I would be arguing with my sister, who was kind of a Bernie bro at the time,
mm-hmm.
on Facebook. And I had a friend that would like join in and kind of like be somewhat on my side, but making a lot of points I had never heard of before. And I was like, where do you get this information? And he pointed to the Mises Institute and all this stuff. And that's what sparked me being a libertarian.
And how old were you when that happened?
20.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Well, anyways, like I started wanting to go meet other libertarians. And I went to, well, I
this
lived
was
in Utah.
Texas?
No,
Utah.
Sorry. I lived in Utah at the time. I went to like a libertarian meetup, and that was the end of me being.
Was this on the military base?
I left the military base.
Okay.
I lived on the military base.
Yeah.
I went to Salt Lake City to
Got
go to
it.
A libertarian meetup.
How many people were there?
Wait, I just have to tell you.
Okay.
Like 20 people. That was the
wow.
end of me being a libertarian.
The first time you went to.
For like 2 years.
The first time you went to a libertarian meetup was the end for you?
Yeah, I was like, this is ridiculous. This is so weird. These people are not, you know.
Why was it so weird? Because they were all like autistic?
I mean, a lot of them were kind of, I mean, there were some cool people there, but
mm-hmm. Some were freaks.
Some of them were weird. I mean, it wasn't really that they were weird.
What was it?
I just got the idea, like, this is pointless. That's the main thing I got from it. We were sitting around talking. It was, like, kind of fun. I took my little sister, who wasn't a libertarian, with me just because I didn't want to go alone. And she seemed to be like, that was weird. You know, I just felt...
What were they doing? I mean, like, were they just complaining, or were they talking about doing something?
They were talking about ideas.
But not ideas of something to do, just libertarian ideas.
Libertarian ideas.
Like who's right on this issue or what the libertarian viewpoint is, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And then when I connected with some of them on like Facebook and stuff, and like they added me to some of their groups and stuff, it was just more fighting. I just found it so cringe. And especially the Mormon / libertarian groups, I got in fights with them because they were so ridiculous. And I was just like, yeah, I'm just done being libertarian. This is pointless. Like, we're never going to change anything. I'm going to go to Texas where at least I can be free, I felt like at the time, and just not worry about any of this stuff. Yeah, but, you know, okay.
So they lost you.
Yeah, they lost me because they're lost. You know, they're just not doing anything. So
they have no vision. They have no, there's nothing they can accomplish in such small numbers.
Moving to New Hampshire, like the idea of that really sparked something in me. And we'll come back to this article when we come back. Free Talk Live, 603-283-6160.
Do you feel like your country no longer holds your values? Have you dreamt of a place where liberty-minded people can come together and leave government overreach behind? There are many people just like you that are discovering FreePrivateCities.com. They start at FreePrivateCities.com and connect via the social media links shown there. All skills will be needed when the first of the Free Private Cities open. It's sooner than you think. Stop arguing and build FreePrivateCities.com. FreePrivateCities.com.
Welcome back to Free Talk Live, talk radio that you control. 603-283-6160. In the studio tonight with you, you've got me, Bonnie.
It's me, Ian.
And 603-283-6160 is the number you can call to get on the show with us tonight, talk about whatever is on your mind. You can bring up whatever you want to bring up or talk about what we're talking about. Right now we're talking about libertarians who don't actually do anything. They just talk the talk but don't walk the walk.
The majority of them.
The majority of libertarians.
Sorry to say it. But of course that's true for most people. Right? There's
about most ideas and things, yeah.
Yeah, I mean there's a lot of talkers and not a lot of doers out there in the world. There's a lot of followers, not a lot of leaders.
Yeah. It's been a lot more exciting since I got to New Hampshire to actually start being able to do things. I basically took a hiatus from thinking about the government overreach at all. I just moved to Texas where I thought I'd be more safe from that. And I just was like, well, I'm not going to convince anybody. I'm just, you know, going to live my life. And
I consider all government existence to be overreach. Like, there's no amount of reach that is okay in my book.
I wasn't saying there is.
Just teasing. Go ahead.
But anyways, when I came here to New Hampshire and met you, it seemed I just feel a lot more fulfilled in what I actually believe in by actually getting out and doing things.
There's so much to do here, it's impossible to actually do it all. You can't.
Yeah.
There are things happening simultaneously in different cities across New Hampshire. There's everything from social events to move-in parties. There's going to be somebody moving into a house in the area. I guess they're on like their third moving truck
We'll find protests, you know, that are pro-freedom that wasn't even us or our friends that started.
We just ran into one downtown today when we were downtown eating. We looked over and there's people at Central Square.
Yeah, and me and Nikki accidentally drove to the wrong town and found a protest in favor of what we were looking for once. Okay, but right now we're reading this open letter by a libertarian who's complaining about just that. Libertarians who talk and don't actually do the walk.
And he is a free stater, or she, or whoever it is that wrote this, by the way.
Okay, I wasn't sure of that.
Somebody who made the move to New Hampshire.
They were making the connection, or, you know, the analogy, saying that you wouldn't hire a personal trainer to help you lose weight that was fat, even if they could prove that they were the smartest, they knew everything about how to lose weight. You'd probably rather go with one who was in shape and, you know, looked like, you know, they were actually putting their education into action.
Right.
So he was saying that, and he says, it seems to me that a lot of libertarians are the fat personal trainer. They love the ideas of liberty. They think those are awesome. They read Rothbard and Mises and can tell you about the business cycle theory. They will wax poetic about what the proper opinion is, whether such and such violates the NAP, the non-aggression principle. Their evictionists have theories about age of majority and contract laws and are in the community, but they don't actually do anything to push for liberty. What they will do, however, is express themselves. They'll write long papers about how they feel about a certain policy. They'll talk about how democracy is rigged and they could never win. They talk about how they think Bitcoin will save us and decentralization is the path to liberty. They'll talk about how we're all going to live on Mars someday, so just hold tight for that future life in the sky. But they won't bother clogging the gears of the democratic system or building technology on a blockchain or building spaceships. No, no, no. That would require effort. Mm. They're only interested in the concepts of liberty in an academic sense and enjoy speculating on the future. That is why liberty is losing all over the world. The greatest champions of liberty are armchair warriors who don't do anything of value to the liberty movement other than write books and share ideas with people who already agree with them.
Yeah, I mean, those are tough, tough words, but I can't say I disagree with him. Now, that's not to say that the books aren't valuable. Like, if it weren't for the books that I first read, then maybe I wouldn't be as much of a freedom lover as I am today. So I'm grateful for the people that took time out to actually write books. And
yeah, I thought that was kind of a weird criticism. I think,
but he's not wrong at the same time, because libertarians are great at writing things and they're not doing much else. And he's absolutely right that most of them are just sort of passed around within the community. Mm. And, you know, now and then you'll reach out to somebody and you'll give them a book they've never read before, and maybe they'll read it and they'll become a libertarian as a result of that. So it's not impossible to use these tools or use books as tools to help recruit people to the ideas of freedom. I've done that before. So I'm grateful for that. But I think the most important point about libertarian books is there's really not much new that's being brought to the table. There's old books from decades ago that, while the numbers may be off, like if you're looking at charts from the 70s, if a book was written in the 1970s, they obviously don't have charts from today. So, you know, if you read a book from today, then it's more up to date with numbers like that. That's why Dr. Mary Ruart, the author of Healing Our World, which is a great libertarian book that is fantastic to use to bring people that are, for instance, on the left into the ideas of freedom, she's updated that four times. So she's constantly updating all the numbers in the books and adding new, you know, cartoons and charts to kind of update it to today. But ultimately, there's really no new ideas, and there's not that many ways to communicate these old ideas of liberty. So we don't honestly need a bunch of new books at this point. We've got plenty of them.
Yeah, and honestly, I've been thinking a lot recently about something that Jeremy Kaufman was saying. Mm-hmm. He was saying that you're not going to convince people academically that liberty is the correct way to go. You should just focus on the people who understand it organizing together. I don't like the pessimistic, like Chris Wade, like those people are, you know, there's only 3% of libertarians and the rest are horrible you know, people that want to control us all. So you just need to forget about those people. It's kind of Chris Wade. I'm kind of paraphrasing, but
yeah, I'm definitely more leaning towards Jeremy Kaufman than I would be on Chris, our co-host on that one. And I used to have the opinion that, oh, well, most people are libertarian. They just don't know it yet. I used to believe that. And I don't think that's true anymore. And I think the COVID thing made that crystal clear to me, whereas it maybe hadn't been before. I think there's a lot of people that do want freedom for themselves, but they don't want freedom for others.
Yeah, I've said it once, and I said it a lot on the show, and I'll say it again. I was just completely like floored and shocked by the fact that all these people who are like my friends, parents, and you know, whatever, these Texans were just like, okay, government, we'll put a mask on our face and we'll close church, whatever you say, because there's a flu going around. Like, I was literally shocked. I never would have thought that was coming so soon.
And like, to Texas.
And yeah, to Texas. Like, it was completely shocking. Everybody's just a bunch of little, you know, babies who want to be taken care of.
Yeah, I don't know if they're all babies necessarily, but as I think was pointed out on the show the other night, if you treat people like children, don't be surprised if they act like children. And I think that if you treat people like adults, they'll act more adult. If people behave based on incentives, right? So if there's a lot of welfare around, you're going to find people are going to go for the welfare because it's available, and why not? It's free money, right? So, but then they become addicted to it, and then getting them off the welfare becomes a real task, and then they don't want the government to go away because that means their welfare payments will go away. We encountered some right-wingers at a recent protest that were concerned about their welfare payments in the act during the act of secession, like what would happen to our Social Security, etc. So if you treat people like adults, they'll act more like adults. So I'm with Jeremy Kaufman on his point that we need to get the people who already agree with liberty together. We need to become a strength, you know, a strong economic bloc, and we need to become a strong voting bloc and a strong disobedience bloc. And all of these things we can do with large numbers of people. And that's what the Free State Project and the migration, the freedom migration to New Hampshire allows us to do. And that changes everything, because if there's enough freedom lovers in one place, then that large group of people that would normally like just put the mask on to go along to get along, the go along to get along people will then start acting more freedom loving. And they'll be, their viewpoint will be, oh yeah, I've always agreed with you libertarians. I've always been with you guys. And then all of a sudden we're the majority. Mm-hmm. That's how it's going to go.
It kind of seems like a lot of conservatives are coming out of the woodworks talking like they always agreed with, you know, libertarians. Actually, that cop that you were going to tell the story about at the beginning of the show, I think we forgot about that. Yeah, he was trying to act like, oh yeah, I've always been, you know, down with you free keeners.
Yeah, he was acting like he's always been our buddy. When
yeah, he's trying to act like he's a big libertarian. Yeah, he's a cop. Anyways, Free Talk Live, 603-283-6160. More coming up. On your phone for, we're on live every night from 7 to 10 Eastern Time p.m. 603-283-6160. And I want to tell you about Liberty in Our Lifetime. Get your digital tickets now for Liberty in Our Lifetime, an event being hosted by the Free Private Cities Foundation. Although physical tickets are sold out, you can still get virtual tickets at lifetimeliberty.com. Liberty in Our Lifetime is exploring projects happening right now around the world that are working to achieve that lofty goal of securing freedom in our lifetime. Speakers from Crypto Valley, Prospera, the Seasteading Institute, and more will be speaking at this October 16th event. Get your digital tickets now at lifetimeliberty.com. See what people are doing all around the world to create voluntary societies with a live and let live attitude at LifetimeLiberty.com. I'd also like to thank Shooty HG, who's a silver level amplifier. What's an amplifier, Ian?
Somebody who has joined the AMP program, which stands for Advertise, Market, and Promote. And you can do that at amp.freetalklive.com, like Shooty HG, for $5 a month. And that's the silver level. You can do more if you want, but five is all we ask. And you get some cool perks and some bennies for doing that. And it helps us spread the ideas of liberty. So if that's.
Helps us get on more radio stations.
Yeah, exactly. So thanks, dude.
Thanks, Shooty HG.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go right into your calls and thoughts. We have Phil. Phil, you're on Free Talk Live.
What's up, Phil?
Hi. I'm just planning my move to New Hampshire, and I'll be there next week. I'm looking forward to it. I have no clue how to connect with anyone out there. I've been to some kind of clubhouse in Dover, mm-hmm. where they had poker games, but I had my Instagram canceled, so
nice.
I had some connections there, and now I have no clue how to get a hold of anybody.
All right. Well, this isn't that hard. First of all, congratulations on your move.
You live in California, right?
Yeah.
I do, but I'm actually going to be bi-coastal, so I'll be coming back here probably once or twice a month.
Oof.
But I mean, I want my main residence is going to be New Hampshire.
That's going to be a tough. That's going to be a tough thing to do. It's going to be like shocking after you've been here for a little while to go back out there. It's going to be hard to handle, I think. But anyway, congrats on that. Here's some of the things you can do. There are some publicly available activism calendars. There's one of them the Free State Project is the host of, and I've made a handy little link that'll take you right over to it. You can just go to calendar.shiresociety.com. and that'll take you to the New Hampshire Freedom, I don't know what they call it exactly, but it's like the New Hampshire Activist Calendar, and it's got different public events for all across all of New Hampshire, basically. And so you can kind of click around through that and see what's available and what's near you or whatever, or where you want to go, and show up to those events and start meeting people, and they'll get you plugged into chat rooms and message boards and groups and things like that. So I'd say that's probably the easiest thing, is find a physical thing that's happening, go to that thing, and start meeting people. You can also go to the Shire Society forum at forum.shiresociety.com, which is, you know, you'll meet some people online that way, but the best way is to just go to a thing in real life.
Oh, that'd be great. And could I give out my new Instagram handle if people want to add me?
Yeah, if you
so
want.
So I can make connections.
I don't know how well that's going to work, but you can try it.
Man, if I get one or two people, hit me up.
Okay.
It's X. Phil 603X.
Phil with a PHIL 603X.
Correct.
All right.
Yep.
What was made you, you know, what was the driving factor for you to finally decide to leave California?
Well, I've been a resident of San Francisco for 5 years.
Oh, you poor man.
And I just moved to Sacramento, but mm-hmm. even here it's getting ridiculous, and I'm ready to leave, and I have the cooperation of my daughter's mom, so
great.
I talked to you guys last year. I actually went to Utah for like 6 weeks last year.
Oh, were you the dude that went to Utah just to go to the gym?
Yeah, that's me.
Wow.
What are the gyms like right now in California? Can you go in without a mask now, or are they still crazy?
Oh, yeah. Well, where I live, it's not as bad. Mm-hmm. I live in the northern suburbs of Sacramento.
Okay.
So it's the gym. No one wears a mask in there. Mm-hmm. I mean, you might see one or two people with a mask on. To be honest, around here, mask wearing isn't really a huge thing. I go in. I haven't worn a mask in months.
Mm. And, but it's still California. You still have to pay for all the crazy crap in, you know, the rest of the state.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And it's, I mean, if I want to go visit my friends in San Francisco, it's insane. Like now, like, you can't even go anywhere. Like, people, like, they harass you about, like, vaccines and masks, and it's out of hand. I feel sad. But the thing is, like, I love San Francisco. I had a great time there.
Mm-hmm.
Met a lot of good people, and it's
time
unlivable.
To go.
I mean, and the crime there is off the charts.
Wow.
Right now.
Hey, thanks, man, and congratulations again. Check out calendar.shiresociety.com, and that'll give you a good list of what's happening and where it's happening, and just show up at stuff. And there's public events like Taproom Tuesdays out in Manchester. There's Social Sundays in Keene. I think there's something out on the seacoast. It's just too far away. I don't know what it is, but I think it's on that calendar. And then, you know, like I said, you'll get connected.
Well, he sounds like a great example of somebody who has every excuse in the world. You know, oh, I've got my baby and my baby's mom mm-hmm. in California, and I'm all the way over here, and I just love San Francisco. But he still cares enough about liberty to want to move to a place where people are gathering together to
He
be
made
free.
It work.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
Do you want to get back to this this letter to Reddit by
yes.
a libertarian?
All right. Do you want me to start off and the next
yeah.
paragraph?
So this is a guy who's a free stater. He's calling out libertarians for being do-nothings, basically.
Talkers and not doers.
Yeah.
He says they won't bother clogging the gears of the democratic system or building technology on a blockchain or building spaceships. No, no, no. None of that that would require effort. They're only interested in the concepts of liberty in an academic sense and enjoy speculating on the future. That is why liberty is losing all over the world. The greatest champions of liberty are armchair warriors who won't do anything of value to the liberty movement other than write books and share ideas with people who already agree with them. It's not about the fight for the future of humanity. No, no, no. It's about the joys of self-expression. Will they try to win a debate? Sure, so long as the debate comes to them on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to bother going out of their way to do so. Hell, they might even try to win debates on strategy, because those are the fun ones, but you'll never see them actually implementing the strategy.
Mm-hmm.
They just provide a quick, see what someone ought to do is... Mm-hmm. dot, dot, dot. Then we have free staters. A veritable tour de force of the Liberty Movement, with no one even coming close. They've basically flipped the GOP in the state, passed countless laws to fight back against the state, lowered taxes, legalized guns, attacked leftist propaganda outlets, got kids out of public school, put car tint back on windows, got the state off the asses of cryptocurrency businesses. I could go on. It's genuinely difficult to even establish a list of the accomplishments of Free Staters because there's so many of them. Why is that? Simple. Free Stater is a self-selecting sample of libertarians who are passionate enough to actually do something to fight for liberty. No useless distractions. No Honduran real estate scams. Well, except for Mark. Just kidding. No. Well, if you
Poor
want...
Mark.
Well, if you wait 50 years, you might be able to be free if you can survive on a diet of fish or Mars lettuce. In New Hampshire, if someone says, see, what someone ought to do is, they're immediately hit with, so why don't you do that?
Mm-hmm.
Ian's always saying that. That alone cuts down on the BS ratio. But it's cold in New Hampshire. Free Staters love liberty enough to put on a coat for the cause. But it's still a democracy. Free Staters are willing to pay by the rules or break them and therefore actually win, despite people saying it's impossible. You might be thinking, am I one of those useless libertarians who think the mere fact that I have the proper opinions validates my club membership? It's possible that you are. I'm not going to make that decision for you. You are going to have to make that assessment on your own. If you are strong enough to admit to yourself that you are, I might recommend that you go do something for the cause of liberty. Figure out what your niche is. A half-drunk Republican who takes a stand for liberty is more valuable to the cause of liberty than a dude who has read Human Action 15 times, but otherwise does nothing.
Yeah, I can't say I disagree with that. And that's not to say that the Republicans care about freedom more than you do. It just means that some of them are out there doing more than you are if you're one of these do-nothing libertarians. So, you know, I agree with him. Start doing a thing. Although better than start now, start planning your move to New Hampshire. And then, like the last guy said, you know, figure out how to get plugged in here and find things that you want to do.
Yeah, and you'll have a team helping you actually get things done. Less excuses.
That makes it a lot better.
Free Talk Live. Thanks for listening.
See you tomorrow.
We'll be live tomorrow.
When a lunar observatory detects a radio broadcast originating from Proxima Centauri, the nations of Earth discover their first contact with an alien race may also be their last. With the Proximans facing an extinction-level disaster, Earth must choose between sending a ship on a multi-year journey or allowing nature to take its course. Saving Proxima, a hard science fiction thriller by Travis S. Taylor and Les Johnson. From BaneBooks.com.